I'm Nicholas Bornolis of Capital Link, and I would like to welcome you all to Capital Link's Invest in Greece webinar series. We're delighted to launch a series of webinars that aim to raise the profile of Greece as a business and investment destination and update the business, investment, and financial community on the latest developments and the outlook of the Greek economy and business and investment opportunities in the country. We are doing this effort culminating with the annual event that we host in New York every December. This year will be December 9. So between now and then, we will be hosting regularly a series of webinars presenting a number of critical topics, including sectors, companies, and so on. We're delighted to kick off this series today with the topic of accelerating reforms, investments, and growth. And we have with us Mr. Alex Patelis, the Chief Economic Advisor to the Prime Minister of Greece, the Hellenic Republic, and he will be discussing with Mr. George Linatsas, the founding partner and Group Managing Director of Axia Ventures Group. In terms of logistics, Mr. Patelis will take us through a brief presentation. Then he will have a Q&A with Mr. Linatsas, and after that, you're welcome to submit any questions during the webinar, and Mr. Linatsas and Mr. Patelis will reply to them. And with this, I will turn the floor over to Mr. Patelis, and I would like to welcome him. And George, thank you also for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bornozis. Thank you so much for the kind invitation. And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone dialing in. This is Alex Patelis. For those haven't met, I'm the Chief Economic Advisor to the Prime Minister. And as Nicholas said, I'm going to go through a brief presentation and then have a bit of an informal conversation with George. So we're going to start with the state of play of the Greek economy, just to frame where we are. The government came to power in 2019. Last year, The Economist magazine, as you probably know by now, selected Greece as a country of the year. And we also saw a return of the country to investment grade. So it's a very natural question for investors and others to ask, what now? Where to next? So let me just take stock of where we are on the economy. On the chart to the left, you can see the monthly economic sentiment survey of the EU. And you can notice that since about a few years ago, the sentiment survey for Greece is now consistently above that of the euro area. And this is, to a large degree, the flip side of what we saw during the crisis. Greece is now outperforming, not only in sentiment, but also in GDP. We got Q1 24 GDP on Friday, and that was 2.1% year over year. And the cumulative outperformance, or rather the cumulative increase since the end of 2019, just before COVID, is over 7 percentage points increase in real GDP in Greece, about 4 points above the euro area average. And we expect this to continue. Some of the bigger picture trends: the government was elected on a platform of attracting capital. And we were delighted to report in 22 record inward FDI that fell somewhat in 23 as a result of monetary tightening globally and, of course, a double election and other developments. But the trend is higher. Greece started, of course, as you know, with a large investment gap that was the product of a decade of crisis. Investment collapsed, and as a result, the capital stock for many years was depleted. And this was probably the main reason why a key objective of the government was to attract foreign capital. National savings are low, and so a lot of capital has to come from abroad. I will tell you that the resolve to attract capital remains undiminished. The country still has a need to expand its capital stock, and it's going to take some time before it's fully able to make up for the lost decade. On the right, however, you can also see that the export share of GDP has increased. This, of course, precedes even this government. And it's an interesting chart that despite pronouncements to the opposite, Greece managed to more than double its export share of GDP without devaluing its currency. Again, we've seen it surge to above 50%. Some of the effect was related to shifts in prices for energy and other goods. And we're seeing a back off now. Last year, exports fell, but we do believe that the trend towards a greater tradable sector in Greece is still there, and this continues to be a priority of the government. On debt, the country remains one of the most indebted countries in the world. However, significant progress has been made in reducing that debt. In fact, excuse me, over the past 4 years, Greece saw the biggest decline in government debt in the European Union as a percent of GDP. I actually believe it's the biggest decline in the world, although I can't fully vouch for every country out there. The forecast is for a continued decline debt to GDP. Our ultimate objective is to fall below Italy. Little noticed as well, if you look at net debt, meaning gross debt minus cash reserves, you will see that last year, 23, net debt actually fell in nominal terms for the first time and is likely to fall again in nominal terms this year as well. The economy, however, we believe is not returning to the mistakes of the past. If you recall, Greece also exhibited rapid growth in the decade of the 2000s, than the euro area average. However, this was the result of a buildup of unsustainable imbalances. Probably the chart that captures this most clearly is unit labor costs, which were increasing in the decade of the 2000s. Obviously, unit labor costs fell during the crisis years, but have not really increased much in recent years. And therefore, the country continues to keep its competitiveness against the euro area. And this would be probably my main response to those who highlight the current account deficit and wonder whether that is sustainable. If you look at the guts of the current account deficit, you will find a similar composition that's different to how it was in the previous decade, two decades ago. But I would say also, again, unit labor costs remain contained. And of course, the equity market, as we know, did very well in 23, but remains below its previous peaks as a percent of GDP. If you were to ask the average person on the street, what's the biggest reform that this government has done, they would tell you it's digitization. From literally zero in 2019, today there's over 1.5 billion digital transactions between the public and the public administration. And this process is continuing. I've chosen to include a chart about the green transition. And this one here shows that there has been significant progress as well. Greece now ranks fourth in the EU and more or less in the world in terms of the percent of electricity that's generated from wind and sun. We have seen very fast increase in renewable energy in the recent years. And looking ahead, there are a lot of applications pending, but a lot of it depends on whether we are able to connect ourselves fast enough with the other countries. And so this is the teaser presentation that I had for you. And the obvious question that's probably in everyone's mind is what is the priorities of the government going forward, particularly now with the European elections behind us. And on that note, I'm going to pass it back to Mr. Linatsas, and we'll do a little bit of a Q&A. Thank you very much. George, the floor is yours.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining this webinar. I want to first thank Mr. Bornozis and Capital Link for the brilliant idea, which promotes investments in Greece. And I'm also honored to be speaking here on this panel with Mr. Alex Patelis. I prepared a set of questions for him. And naturally, the first one has to be about Euro elections. We just had them. Mr. Patelis, what are your thoughts over the Euro election results? And what do these results really mean for Europe going forward? If you could comment on that, please.
Thank you. To the extent that I can comment, given that I now work for government and we have to be careful, I would say that the European parliamentary elections took place on Sunday across 27 countries. And broadly speaking, the results were more or less in line with what opinion polls had indicated before. In fact, the biggest party, the European People's Party, slightly exceeded expectations and remains the most dominant political force within the EU Parliament. Of course, New Democracy, the party that is governing in Greece today, is a prime member of the EPP. We're no longer the largest parliamentary member of the EPP, but we are one of the largest. And it looks like, in general, notwithstanding the talks about the surge in the far right, it looks like the center, quote unquote, the center held well. And the allegiance between the three main political parties in the European Parliament looks strong enough and looks, strong enough to be able to achieve the re-election, reappointment of Ms. Ursula von der Leyen as president of the Commission. As you know, the process is as follows. The EPP holds its meeting early next week. Then the leaders of the 27 EU countries meet at the end of June, 27th, 28th of June, and formally decide on who they vote on, who they would like the next president of the Commission to be. And then in mid-July, the Parliament ratifies that nomination. Of course, the kink is that the parliamentary vote is secret. And in the past, there have been some slippage amongst MEPs. But we believe that there's a very, very high likelihood that Ms. Ursula von der Leyen is reappointed president of the Commission. Now, if we look at what has changed elsewhere, I will tell you stuff that you can read in the paper as well, namely that there was a decline relative to the previous parliament of Green parties, and there was an increase, in the vote for far-right parties. However, far-right parties, populist parties, tend to be fragmented in the sense that it's unlikely that they will join forces to create a large political party. As such, I would say that the main priorities of the new commission are likely to be similar to what many had believed before the election. And those include, there's a big focus on defense. Our Prime Minister of Greece has co-written a letter with President Tusk of Poland and others to call for a common defense initiative in Europe. There is, of course, a big focus on the so-called Letta report that came out in the spring and the Draghi report that will come out this summer that outline ideas and proposals on how to push the European Union forward. And as an economist, I will highlight proposals for deepening the single market. The Prime Minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, we are supportive of the Capital Markets Union, and the Prime Minister has also written a letter about territorial supply constraints, so-called territorial supply constraints. These are ways in which multinationals often try to stop competition and try to stop prices from equalizing across different member states. Obviously, the green transition continues. The Green Deal was one of the main achievements of the previous commission. There seems to be more focus on pragmatism on the Green Deal as a result of some backlash, particularly amongst agriculture. And there will be, of course, a discussion for the future of the RRF. And as always, immigration is likely to be a big topic, although that's not an area of specialty. So I continue to see the glass half full. I do not share the pessimism that's often expressed in the press. Let's not forget some of the successes of the EU leadership in the previous 5 years. We had common vaccination drive and dealing with COVID. We had the creation of the Recovery and Resilience Fund. We had the challenge of Russia invading Ukraine. EU supported Ukraine. We had dealing with the energy crisis. We had the digital revolution, immigration crises, and others. And I would say that, and of course, the Green Deal itself. And I would say that, in general, the European Union has been able to address many of these problems a lot more effectively than would be the case if these 27 countries were each on their own. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your very thorough answer. And I'm glad that you repeated for us a number of initiatives that we all keep forgetting. And we mostly complain about the European Union, but it's important to also understand how much they've been supportive to all sorts of initiatives that without the existence of the European Union and as it is today, they would have never happened. Naturally, my next question has to come back to home. And naturally, the question is about the Greek election result and if that impacts at all your government. And going forward and reforms and how that may change your reform appetite going forward, because this is about reforms and investments in Greece. So we are particularly interested to hear your thoughts about that one.
Thank you. So for those who don't know, Greece has held a total of 5 different elections over the past 12 months. There was the first election in May 23, the second national election in June 23, with New Democracy winning a parliamentary majority. And then there were 2 rounds of local elections in October, and now 1 round of European parliamentary elections in June. Unsurprisingly, this has been a long, drawn-out process, and I think a lot of Greeks are very happy that they don't have to face elections again for another 3 years. This particular election in Greece, and this is different to the rest of Europe, was characterized by very low turnout. Turnout was about 40%, firmly below the level of other years. And the New Democracy received about 1 million votes fewer than previous times for the simple reason that most people abstained. There did not seem to be a feeling that there was something hugely at risk with the election, with a government having a parliamentary majority. There was an increase in the far-right vote as a percentage, but the increase in terms of the actual votes was negligible. In fact, the 2 main parties of opposition, Syriza and PASOK, both saw their actual votes decline. So going forward, the government has a 3-year clear horizon until the next national election, which is due in the summer of 2027. And obviously, we intend to use that time to continue with structural reforms for the country. And I would say that the overriding theme and the overriding objective was as outlined by the Prime Minister in the May and June 23 elections, namely that Greece spent the previous decades struggling to stay in the euro and is spending this decade trying to converge with the rest of the euro area, both economically and politically and institutionally. And so the focus now is going to be on reforms and on tackling the main issues that that people face without, let's say, the burden of having an election ahead of us.
Thank you, Mr. Patelis. I want to get a little bit more specific answers on a number of reform initiatives that are very important for the investment community when it comes to the future of Greece. And I want to start with justice-related reforms. A lot of talk has been done about the justice systems in Greece, the delay in processing cases. Where do you stand with that, and what reforms is your government going to initiate going forward around that front?
Thank you. So today, if you ask business people, one of their key concerns, remaining concerns, is the slow speed of justice in Greece. There's not that much concern about the quality of justice. It's simply that it takes too long. And this has been a priority from the start of the second term and will continue to do so. Now, speeding up justice is a little bit like fighting tax evasion. There is no magic wand and no one recipe that you can follow to achieve your objective. You have to do many small steps. And this includes an evaluation system for judges and a better promotion system for judges. It includes setting up specialized courts. It includes bunching cases together with pilot cases, training judges, because a lot of times the issues that they have to judge on are quite complicated. Digitizing court documents. There's a huge project of digitizing court documents to free up time and that will then be allocated more efficiently. There were two big reforms over the past 12 months. One was a law passed early this year, which not only tightened penalties and made the penal code stricter, because the penal code under the previous Syriza government had been loosened considerably, but it also undertook a number of interventions to speed up the justice system, including not allowing more than one postponement of court case, also making it more difficult for those who are serial lawsuiters, so to speak, people who just sue each other, and other initiatives like that. There was also a big reform that was voted through in the spring, which is the redrawing of the judicial map. This might seem a bit tangential, but actually it's critical. There are many courts in Greece, and they are very fragmented. Redrawing the judicial map means consolidating courts, means putting them in the right place, and by making them larger, they're able to handle a lot more cases. And the estimate of the Ministry of Justice is that when this judicial map reform is completed, the average wait time for a court case will drop by a third, from 1,500 days today to 1,000 days from the moment the case starts to the moment the final decision is made. So this is going to be a continued priority for the second term. And this is something that requires a lot more steps.
Thank you very much. You mentioned during your discussion about the justice reforms, tax evasion. That's a key question that's been over time important for all Greek governments. We want to hear how you view reforms related to tax evasion to date and what you're going to do going forward. But similarly, and there has been a question by the audience about that, what is going to be your policy on tax percentages for personal income tax, for corporate tax, if there is any comment you can make for the next 3 years of this government? It is a question by one of the participants also. So tax evasion and tax policy going forward.
So tax evasion, I mean, fighting tax evasion is something that started in 2019, and there have been a number of initiatives. I won't bore you with the details, but you might recall one of the first things the government did was to say that if you didn't spend at least 30% of your income using digital means, then you would face a penalty. Now, we are things have moved on quite a bit since 2019. COVID helped too, digitization efforts helped too, and the percentage of electronic transactions, or rather the number of electronic transactions, has utterly exploded and continues to increase dramatically. Late last year, there was another bill passed through Parliament that included more reforms, for example, banning the use of cash over 500 euro. You're not allowed to purchase any goods over 500 euro using cash in Greece, so you face a penalty. Banning the use of cash in real estate transactions. Believe it or not, one in four real estate transactions in Greece made use at least partly of cash. I would say one of the biggest reforms that is now nearly complete, in fact, has been completed, is connecting POS machines to cash registers. Greece will be one of the few countries where that is the case. What that means is that when you purchase a good or service in Greece using a POS machine with your card or your phone, that information of the transaction is automatically transmitted to the tax authorities and registered. And that means that the owner, the business owner, cannot pocket the VAT that you've paid or not declare that income. And this was a very difficult reform because POS machines and cash registers come in all shapes and sizes. And of course, Greece has a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises, but is now being completed. A big initiative is promoting direct payment systems. Those of you in the United States would be familiar with systems like Venmo or Alipay in China or UPI in India. In Greece, the equivalent system is called Iris or Iris, and it's operated by Dias, a company that's co-owned by the four systemic banks and the Bank of Greece. And so transactions, people to people using Iris are free up to 500 euro and have exploded. We have now made it obligatory for sole traders to also offer direct payment as a way method of payment. And in 25, the target is that all commercial transactions in Greece will feature the option of a direct payment. Direct payment makes it easy. The more people use their phone or their card to purchase small items, the more likely it is that they eventually stop using cash altogether, and that helps with tax evasion. Of course, tax evasion is not just about digital stuff. It's also about monitoring. And one by one, the system is becoming more and more digital. For example, today, companies are slowly being forced to make it obligatory to upload all their business expenses on the so-called My Data system, which is a system run by the tax authorities, and only those expenses uploaded to that system will eventually be eligible to be claimed against revenue. We had a new method of taxation for self-employed people. The idea behind that is that previously was the case that the vast majority of self-employed people declared very low incomes. And the idea behind the reform is that no one should be declaring income less than the minimum wage because otherwise they could have the option of working for the minimum wage. And this, of course, was a big reform that went through at the end of last year. There's also big emphasis shifting in on tax audits away from people-to-people tax audits towards digital tax audits, automated tax audits, but also tax audits that are smarter using data and information and better targeted, meaning that they're more likely to be successful. And that's also another big initiative. Now, maybe I will use the second question to make a broader comment. We have a new fiscal framework, as you know, in Europe as of this year in the European Union. And this abandons the previous system that we had, where most countries had specific fiscal targets. So Greece, for example, last year had a target of 1.1% primary surplus. We exceeded that at 1.9%. And for this year, our target remains at more or less 2%. Under the new system, and for those of you who are not familiar with it, under the new system, the budget balance is assessed over the cycle, meaning over 4 years. And so if your budget outperforms for whatever reason in 1 year, if that is because that is assumed to be because your economy is outperforming relative to its trend. And so strictly speaking, you're not allowed to spend that extra money, but you set it aside for a rainy day. And the idea is that if in the following year, your economy is hit by a temporary shock, then you have built a buffer against that. Instead, each country is judged by the rate of increase of the so-called net expenditure benchmark, which is basically expenses minus the cyclical stuff, so unemployment benefits or interest payments or anything else that's cyclical. And each country has a ceiling of an increase in those this net expenditure benchmark that it cannot exceed. And therefore, the question of, you know, policies of tax and spending policy is a lot more complicated than it was before. In our platform, we have another 1 percentage point reduction in Social Security contributions, and it's penciled in for 2025 and 2027, and we'll see what happens. But the rest depends on how exactly this new framework operates in practice. It's a new system that we're all, you know, getting used to, and I think any decisions will be made once we all feel very comfortable with it. But generally speaking, we're happy with our fiscal situation. I would say that the overall budget balance of Greece remains now it's better than most European Union countries, including countries like Germany. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, very thorough answer. I want to shift focus to the banking sector in Greece, which was one of the most problematic sectors throughout the crisis, because not because exactly of their fault, but because of the overall situation in Greece. The banks have gone a long way. They've cleaned up their balance sheets. They are now profitable, very profitable again. And just recently it was announced they will be allowed to distribute dividends, which is a first for 15 some years in the Greek banking sector. I would like you to comment on the situation of the Greek banks. And in particular, I want your opinion about your government's intention vis-a-vis the remaining stake in National Bank of Greece. Recently, you sold a few months back a stake, and you still have a stake. I don't remember exactly, it's around 18%, I think, through Hellenic Financial Stability Fund. If you could comment on that, it's something that is on the radar of the investors, and they would like to know your views.
So I will very briefly summarize, you know, where we started and where we at. As you know, in 2019, the four systemic banks in Greece had half the loan book non-performing. Clearly, that was a big priority for the government. And if you'll recall back then, there was even talk that one of them might be forced to merge with another one. Through the Hercules scheme, those NPEs have been shifted to the servicers, and they're being reduced at the servicer level. This is an ongoing process. Another big reform, as you know, was the single insolvency framework that was voted through with a new bankruptcy and restructuring framework in Greece, which did not really exist before, and one that is ready for capital markets and banking union whenever that arrives at the European Union level. There were the big recaps of Piraeus Bank and Alpha Bank in 21. And as a result, the banks came back to profitability together with the ECB interest rate increases. Since then, of course, the objective of the government is to reduce the stakes, the remaining stakes. The Hellenic Financial Stability Fund, which is actually in control of those stakes, proceeded, as you know, last year of disposing of its stake in Eurobank, fully disposing of its stake in Alpha Bank through the entry of UniCredit, Italy's bank, one of the first entry of a European bank in a Greek bank, if I'm not mistaken, since 2006. And then we had, of course, the disposal of Piraeus Bank stake, and we had a sale of 22% of NBG shares. Ahead of us, we have another 18% stake in NBG. My understanding is that this is likely to take place sometime after the summer. We all are also always, what's the word? It's always got seasonality to think of, but of course, this is a decision of the HFSF. There's also another initiative, which is the merger between Attica Bank and Pankritia Bank. and the cleanup of Attica Bank, which has been ongoing and which will eventually create the fifth or sixth, depending on how you count them, major bank in Greece. For the government, we have other priorities as well. I mentioned the promotion of direct payment systems and the continued increase in digital transactions. I should also mention we are focused on how to grow the mortgage market. The corporate loan market has been expanding in recent years, but household lending is still declining, and this is something that we are not comfortable with. The number of new mortgages in Greece remains very low compared to any reasonable metric. The government did a big initiative called Spidimo, which was to subsidize the mortgages of young people by purchasing their first home. This was hugely successful, and we are now close to securing funding to do a second wave of such a program. Interestingly, the private banks, some of the banks have developed their own mortgage products now, more aggressive mortgage products aimed at that market of young people trying to enter the housing ladder. I will remind you that it's still the case that circa 3/4 of real estate transactions in Greece are done without credit. So this is another focus. And I would say in general, the objective of the government is to promote competition in the banking system. We changed the law to allow non-banking financial institutions to provide household credit. That would be it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I want to move now into the green transition as well as digital reforms. Where do you stand as a government with the digital, with the green transition? And also similarly, how do you see the digital reforms that are undergoing? And how do you see these affecting the growth of the Greek economy going forward?
So I see we don't have too many minutes left, so I'm going to be a little bit faster with my answers. I would say for digital, look, a lot of the projects are already in place. It's basically digitizing everything, digitizing the health documents. We now have a lot of health data that can be analyzed to improve health policy, digitizing core documents, as I mentioned, digitizing the pension system. There's going to be a single identity number launched soon for every Greek citizen that will consolidate all the different identity numbers that exist today. And this is, it's just a question. Digital is more an issue of bandwidth and how do you manage to do so many projects at the same time. The green transition, of course, is the most important issue of our times. And as I mentioned before, we have moved ahead with renewable energy generation. I forgot to mention that today Greece has around 2.5 times the number of applications pending as it has already granted in licenses. And today, the licenses that we have granted are sufficient to cover our needs by 2030. So clearly, there's no point giving out more and more licenses without obviously deepening and improving the distribution network, boosting storage and battery facilities. And of course, the ultimate prize is interconnectedness with other countries. We hope that the new commission will promote projects such as connecting Greece to Germany or to Central Europe and potentially in the future to Ukraine. And of course, doubling or tripling the size of the connection to Italy so that we can export more of the energy. I will pause here so we have time for more questions.
Okay. One of the big issues in the Greek economy in order to sustain the rate of growth is supply of labor. It has been an increasing problem over time, and it's going to only get worse. It's not only a Greek problem, it's pan-European, but what actions do you take to address this issue?
So Greece, a country that had 28% unemployment and was obviously the primary focus of any government would be to find a job for everybody today faces a situation where a lot of employers complain that they cannot find suitable labor. Now, luckily, there still is, in our opinion, ample room for labor supply to expand. If you compare the proportion, the participation rate, of Greece compared to other European Union countries, you will find that we are significantly below the euro area average. If you zero in on particular population groups, you will find that we have a very low participation rate from women, the third lowest in the EU, a low participation rate from young people and from old people. And I think that there will be a focus in the coming months and years of intervening to boost labor supply. There's also low participation from people with disabilities. And of course, there's the brain drain, people who left the country during the crisis year. When I mean by interventions, I will give you one example. We recently abolished a penalty that that existed if you were a pensioner and you also worked even for 1 hour a month, 30% of your pension was withheld. The theory being that the previous governments thought that that if you have a pension, you know, jobs should go to those who are in more need. But what has happened since then is that the number of pensioners that declare themselves as employed has exploded from 38,000 to over 100,000 today. So it's very clear that when you remove the roadblocks or the disincentives, you will find labor supply expands. And this is what we need to do if we want Greece to continue to have a very rapid growth rates. I should mention one more thing, the state. So reforming the state is another very, very top priority of the government. This is very clear, one of the messages from the 23 election, but also the 24 election, is that the electorate is unhappy with the speed of reforms in the way in which the government itself operates. It needs to become more more flexible. It needs to be better, more efficient, more productive. This will be a big focus. And within that, you will not be surprised to hear that a big focus of the people in Greece and of the government in Greece is healthcare. Healthcare is the probably the second most important issue during the campaign after the cost of living crisis, which of course is global, but upgrading the healthcare system in Greece is another top priority of the government.
I have a question that I want to make sure I get to a question to you from the audience. It's about the sectors where you see growth in the Greek economy going forward. Obviously, tourism, hospitality has been growing a lot, and I'm sure it will continue to grow. Energy is a new important sector in Greece. What are your views of the attractive sectors for foreign investors going forward?
Look, I mean, we are a government. We believe in the free market, so it's not the job of the government to pick sectors. And let's say we don't believe in industrial policy. I do think that now we do get this question a lot. So I have, you know, a standard answer, which is that if you think of the comparative advantage of the country, there's some very clear advantages. Geography, we are at the crossroads between Europe, Asia, and Africa. Anything to do with logistics, anything to do with interconnectedness. For example, we recently visited India, and there was a lot of talk of connecting India to Europe with the so-called IMEC route that India wants to develop. And this would basically, Greece could be the entry gate to that. There is, of course, the weather, the sun and the sea, which makes it attractive for green investments. There is tourism. Tourism itself is changing. It's no longer just about people in the north of Europe coming to Greece to soak sun during the summer season. But tourism has now expanded to include sports tourism, medical tourism. We're developing education tourism. For the first time, private universities will be allowed in Greece, but we also have English language courses that are producing now their first graduates, and we want to develop an education industry that in Cyprus contributes up to 6% of GDP. We have then labor that is still Wages are still relatively low in Greece, and people are well educated. They speak English. This is a good place for nearshoring. This is a good place for middle and back offices. We have, of course, a burgeoning tech ecosystem as well. At 11% of the top AI talent in Europe has actually graduated from a Greek university. So there's a variety of sectors, but ultimately it's not our decision to make.
What is that percentage again?
11%.
Okay, mm-hmm. Interesting. I think we're running out of time, and I asked Capital Link to inform us about how much time we have left. But I want to squeeze in at least one more question.
Go on.
Mr. Bornozis, do we have time?
Please go ahead.
Okay. We started a question about Europe in general and how it gets affected from the European election results. I want to ask your opinion about the Capital Markets Union in Europe and how you see that playing out. I think it's important.
So this is a very interesting question. It is one of the priorities of the letter report. It also was a lot of debate at the Council and at the ECOFIN at the level of the finance ministers. And I am optimistic that we will move forward with Capital Markets Union at the next commission. As far as Greece goes, the Prime Minister has highlighted that it really does not make sense that European savers channel their hard-earned savings to the United States or elsewhere simply because capital markets in Europe are not as well developed, and to support investments elsewhere, which ends up coming back and hitting them through more productive US or other companies. And Capital Markets Union clearly is an objective that Greece shares. On the specifics, we also support the creation of a common European supervision of capital markets. We note that the SSM, the European Bank Supervisor, has been very successful. I don't think there's a single member state that today would suggest that we go back to national banking supervision. We understand the concerns of some smaller countries, in terms of moving towards unified European capital markets regulation and supervision. But for us, it would make a lot of sense, and we would be supportive of any initiatives to better join and merge capital markets across the European Union.
Thank you, Mr. Patelis. Everything has been very informative to our audience. There are a number of other questions, but I don't think we have time. Mr. Bornozis?
George, it's up to you. If you want to take another minute or so, we're fine.
I will maybe a closing statement, Mr. Patelis.
Yeah, I want to also speak about the RRF. The RRF was a big success of the previous commission. As you know, a lot of money allocated to Greece. We just submitted our fourth payment request. Absorption was about 2 billion euro last year. We expect a more absorption to be 3.5 billion this year. I do think that a lot of the absorption rates you will find will be accelerating. We have a large loan segment of the RRF. Companies have borrowed using that method, but of course, the impact on the economy comes when they spend the money. Obviously, these are investments. These are multi-year investments. So you will find that there will be a significant boost to GDP both this year and next and 26 from the absorption of the RRF. Everybody's asking what will happen in August 26 when the RRF concludes. I think it's simply too early to know. We need the full commission to take form, and the new commissioners all to be in place. And I suspect in early 25 is when the real debate will start at the European Union level on how can we avoid the so-called cliff effect in August 26 if suddenly the RRF concludes without any opportunity for extension or without any subsequent program. Obviously, that would not make a lot of sense. And I suspect, as usual, there will be a lot of negotiation amongst the EU members, and eventually I think we will come to some reasonable compromise. But for the next 2 to 3 years, the RRF will be a significant boost to the Greek economy. Thank you.
Mr. Patelis, thank you so much for answering all these questions and enlightening us with all this useful information for us and the participants. And on my side, I want to thank Capitaling and Nicholas for inviting me to host this discussion. We are completed for now. I think we've covered a lot of different areas, and I'm sure we can keep going on for the next hour or so. But I think, Nicholas, we have covered all the important points about the reforms and the growth initiatives of the Greek economy.
Let me also take my turn in thanking both George Linatsas for this very interesting conversation, and of course the host, Mr. Bornozis and Ms. Bornozi and Capital Link for giving us this opportunity. Thank you, and have a very nice day.
Well, I would like to close by thanking both of you. Mr. Patelis, this was frankly a very insightful presentation. You shared your insight on many critical topics that are of great interest to investors. And Mr. Linatsas, thank you for being an expert moderator. So thank you to both. We had a great attendance. I will share with you the questions that have been submitted so we can respond to them offline. And again, thank you. We look forward to the next webinar next Tuesday on the subject of Greek economy. Thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.